We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me over there in BEA, beautiful New York City, my man Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Fresh off of putting the solid baby into the bath. Don't worry. He is now out of the bath and with Jody with an eye. But I feel refreshed myself, even though it was just external for me.
By the way, we should point this out here, Dan.
Yeah.
Please tell the kind folks listening, wherever they are.
Oh, my gosh.
About your bath setup for the little man.
The bath setup? Oh, it is Patriot League related, I guess. Good transition. So I am just learning all of these things as a very stupid new father, but you just pour water over them when they're in the bathtub and like the contraption that holds them in place. And I am using the Lehigh cup that I purchased, I think, the morning of your wedding that I used for many years to drink my cold brew and iced coffee out of. And now it has been retired and it is now, I guess, the solid baby taking very Patriot League bath.
It is the Patriot League circle of life.
It is. And it does get wet.
Yeah.
There's lots of skin. And it's a Patriot League drum and fifey bath.
Welcome back to the show. We've been doing Q&A shows the last 3 weeks. So the first time we did it in the month of May, it was you asking me, then me asking you with a weird sort of role-playing bent to it.
Wonderful.
And then last week, we had questions from the Verballerhood out there. Today, what we're doing is going back to an old concept. And by old, I mean a year old. We did it once previously.
Can we change the name?
We can absolutely change the name, but let me give some context for where we're headed with this. Last year, the show that we did, it may have been the first week of June, if I recall. We called it, Are We Sure That? ... And the whole premise behind it is you and I are going to take some college football topics, ones that really play into conventional wisdom, and we're going to challenge those beliefs. We're going to stress test them a little bit and see if for sure it is something that we are sure of or not. Now, the show last year was titled, Are We Sure That? And you expressed an interest a couple days ago and now again just a few seconds ago to change the name to something else.
It's apparently like a Bill Simmons phrase. And
I mean,
I don't want to be.
He uses it.
He didn't invent it, for sure.
There are other people who have used that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we could pump the brakes. It could be college football-ish with after further review or upon further consideration. Or I kind of like pumping the brakes.
I love pump the brakes. I use that 4 times a day.
And we can. Yeah, you probably are PhD level with your corporate lingo.
Oh yeah, buddy.
What was the one you told me yesterday?
Blocking and tackling?
Blocking and tackling. What is that?
It refers to the mundane elements of corporate life, the busy work, the seat work, if you will.
So paperwork, calls, conference calls, meetings, the just blocking things and tackling. You have to be through. Never heard it. I had to ask somebody the first time I heard brass tacks. Let's get down to brass tacks. Like, where are we going?
We can go offline. We can go soup to nuts. We can go 30,000 foot view, whatever you want to do.
Should we do an entire episode, like right before we begin? I don't know how we're going to preview this here. I think we should mix it up. Should we just preview the Big Ten as if we are in a Monday morning meeting?
I could absolutely do that.
Okay, so let's pump some brakes and actually determine whether or not we should just hit the gas. You know, perhaps
That's
pumping
right.
the brakes is not the move. It's the off season, so there's a lot of stop and start. You have news, you have spring ball, you have recruiting and signing day and coaches moving around. So there is action, but then there's no action. So there's a lot of brake pumping anyway. Urban Meyer announces he's the coach in waiting at USC. There's all of those stories coming and going. So I like pump the brakes.
So here's the only issue with this.
Yeah, and we should explain what this actually is.
We will explain what this is. Yeah. I had my hypothetical sound all queued up and ready to go. I don't know if you can get me a brake screeching sound while I'm doing some of our setup here on tonight's podcast, if you could put that in the old Dropbox folder.
In the back of your mind, think to yourself, should we be pumping the brakes?
No, I'm saying I need
that
audio element.
Okay.
For tonight's show. If
I'll
you could find that, put it in the folder. I'll see if I can spin it up. Need it in a wave, though, Dan.
You need it in a wave. Okay.
Here is what we are doing this evening, again, to rehash. We are taking college football conventional wisdom for the coming 2019 season, and we are stress testing it. We're going to look at some things that we have come to accept as fact, for better or worse, and deciding, should we pump the brakes? Should we go pedal to the metal on these ideas? Are we willing to accept those under the big tent that is the Solid Verbal Podcast?
Roll through the stop sign. No brakes.
If you are listening for the first time, you can find the show at solidverbal.com. You can also find us out there on social media. Solid Verbal is available via Facebook, via Twitter, Instagram. We're also out there on Reddit. We've got a subreddit that's created by our loyal... I almost did it again and said lawyer verballers. Which we got an email from lawyerverballers@gmail.com.
We got a bunch.
A lot of lawyers who also listen to the show who are verballers and loyal at that.
Shout out
to the subreddit started by some of those loyal fans. reddit.com/r/solidverbal. And don't forget, I know we keep reminding people, but if you are on the website at solidverbal.com, sign up for the newsletter. You know, we're getting into June here. We got some stuff that we're cooking in the laboratory. You might want to be among the first to find out about that stuff. You can get the newsletter of intent delivered to your inbox. We won't spam you. We just use it to parrot out some of our more important things. And finally, wherever you could find a podcast, you can find Solid Verbal. We're always adding our show to whatever directories may exist out there in the wild. Wherever you could find your podcast, you could download the show. And we will be here all throughout the offseason once we get a little closer to the start of the college football season. We'll switch it up from once a week to twice a week just to make sure you get...
Bare minimum twice a week.
Bare minimum twice a week, to be fair, just to make sure that you've got enough college football content flowing through those ears.
Oh, my Daniel. God. Check the Dropbox.
Check the Dropbox. Okay.
Yeah.
While Tell I'm me checking how that the sounds, Dropbox, sounds to you. Why don't you
yeah, so let me up, explain this.
Work up our first topic.
So over the course of the offseason, there's just a ton of college football conventional wisdom. Like, for instance, Saturdays are amazing. I don't think I can question that. That is something that we have accepted as fact or near fact. What we're doing today with today's exercise is saying, is this true, though? This is what we've sort of accepted to be the universal college football truth, narrative-wise, player-wise, program-wise. But should we take a moment and question it as the college football scientists we are? Isn't it true that if you're supposed to get a PhD, you have to defend your dissertation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You submit it, yeah. And then it's questioned by your peers, and you have to defend it. Or if you're doing some sort of experiment, it has to be blind, you know, double blind, whatever it is. There has to be an element of challenging. I probably used the blind term incorrectly, but there has to be, you know, you have to redo your experiment to see if you can get the same results over and over again. So there's an element of questioning things. That's what we're doing here today as college football scientists. Does the sound load and is it good to go?
I've got it. So the very first topic we have here.
Yeah.
Do we want to pump the brakes?
That's pretty good, right?
That's good. I like it.
Yeah.
On the idea that Manny Diaz was the right hire for the Miami Hurricanes. Now,
okay.
This was a pretty big story.
Give me the case for.
This is a pretty big story. So the case for Manny Diaz is that he's got a familiarity with the area, right? He's from
absolutely
Miami. He didn't go to Miami. He went to Florida State, but
right.
He's a Miami guy. He was coaching there very recently as a defensive coordinator under Mark Richt. Was actually hired to be a head coach at Temple. Only had that job for about 3 weeks before Mark Richt retired from Miami and the Canes hired him back. He's got a ton of experience as a defensive coordinator, has been a DC for about 13 years, has had a bunch of stops along the way.
Mississippi State.
So people know Manny Diaz. He's long been thought of as a very bright young mind in the sport of college football. He's got a lot of passion, is seen as a very good recruiter. There's a lot to like there. That is the case for. The case against is that he's never been a head coach before.
Right.
And the case against is certainly that Manny Diaz is stepping into a situation where Miami, I know we've joked about losing the swagger, but Miami is not what Miami used to be. And
can we, that might go number one overall. Fantasy things wise.
Miami losing the swagger?
If you are Ty Kuiper Jr.
Yeah.
or Ty McShay, and you are projecting out Miami trying to find its lost swagger or swag. Is it a top four pick? So one of our first two picks each? Do you think it's more of a reach because whatever happens during the season happens and that adjusts the storyline of trying to recapture the swag? It might be more of an off-season fantasy thing.
I love that so much. Oh my God.
Because... And we'll put this online. We'll put it on Twitter. Our dear, dear friend Bruce Feldman wrote a story about Manny Diaz trying to recapture the lost Miami swag. And I did the research. And you could argue that Miami has been swagless more often than it has been swagful. And you can look, if you look up Al Golden or Randy Shannon or Mark Richt or Butch David, you just keep going back.
They're all trying to capture the swag.
And you look and... interviews with recruits, and it's just like, we're going to bring that swag back. There is more attempting to bring swag back in Coral Gables than there are days filled with swag.
Right. And by
in
swag,
my limited research,
by the
that's
way,
what I have
when
come
we
across.
Say swag, we mean swagger for the people out there who will call us on it, but you
right.
get the gist of what we're saying.
Right.
That is the case both for and against Manny Diaz, Dan. How do you feel about this hire? Just from a 30,000 foot view, if you will.
I haven't thought about it a lot, but it's an interesting time for Miami since Florida is still undergoing changes. Florida State, you know, not a super hot start to Willie Taggart in terms of raising the profile of the brand in the state of Florida. The ACC has one clear major power. So it is a good time to not be, you know, in a sea full of really destructive forces. And so I like the timing. I like Manny Diaz. I think he's bright. I think he'll recruit pretty well. I'm curious to see what happens in the short term at quarterback. I don't think Tate Martell is going to be necessarily the answer. And that has really been what has dogged Miami recently, is getting 2-3 good games from somebody, whoever it is, Malik Rozier most recently, and then it going sideways. And
yeah,
so
right. Yeah.
Quarterback to me is a huge deal, and I know it's more difficult to find really good quarterbacks in Florida because of the level of defensive competition in high school. Hard to develop in Florida. So that's why Miami has gone, you know, Brad Kaya is from like right by where my parents are in Southern California. That's why they have to go out of state. So I think there are challenges with that job that are not obvious, and people just think, oh, South Florida, they'll load up with talent. It'll be great. Maybe. It's a for sure winnable division given where those teams are at, but my only real question is he in the back of his mind organized on a daily, hourly, every minute basis, you know, knowing what's going on in the program, having a vision. Because to me, saying he's from Miami, he gets it.
That's where I was going to go with this. That's why I'm pumping the brakes on this. You know,
it feels too much sister USC schoolish to me that I'm worried about that angle, which doesn't necessarily mean he will fail, but it means he has to outgrow that angle.
Getting the guy who knows the culture, the whole welcome home thing that I know we've had fun with in the past.
That Mark Richt just was welcomed home.
He was just welcomed home.
Yeah.
And Scott Frost was welcomed home. And they tried to welcome
Harbaugh,
Jeff Brohm home to Louisville. Like, I get the angle. I understand why bringing Jim Harbaugh home to Michigan's a big deal. And that
Super
means
Bowl
a lot
coach, different.
To
yes.
the alumni, right? I get that whole angle. There is definitely a place for it, but I think it's overrated. I really
do. As do I.
Really overrated. I didn't used to feel that way, but then I did the show for 12 years, and now I really feel like it's an overrated quality that a lot of fans latch onto when it comes to head football coach. I like Manny Diaz. I think he's forward-thinking. He's certainly not rooted to any like old school mentality when it comes to coaching a football team, but we still don't really know what he is. He's very much an unknown quantity. Some of his stops as a defensive coordinator have gone better than others. So his stock has sort of risen and fallen over the course of time here over the, like the last decade or so. I'm pumping the brakes on this just because we don't know a lot about what that team is going to look like. We don't know if he's going to be able to bring that swagger back. We know he's got a passion for that area of Florida. And certainly for the school that is Miami. I think his father was the mayor of Miami or something like that. There's a lot of familiarity there. But
by the way, I believe, and I'm confirming this as we speak, I believe both Butch Davis and Jimmy Johnson went to Arkansas.
Yeah, so it's...
are like their coaching careers, a lot of it took place in Texas and Oklahoma. And
they're
like,
on Rushmore in Coral Gables. So you don't need to be from there
they're
to
not
get
Miami
it, to build
dudes.
A winner. And,
Dennis Erickson definitely isn't, yeah.
Let's pump the brakes on Manny Diaz. I hope it works. College football is more interesting when Miami is interesting. And I would love, truly, if somebody could bring the swagger back. But he's just so much of an unknown quantity at this point. I think given the... Here's what I will say. Given the fact that it broke down with Mark Richt as late as it did in the coaching carousel, the fact that they were able to go out and get Manny Diaz away from Temple was a coup. In that sense, it was absolutely the right move. Who else are you going to get at that juncture? It's a tough spot to put any program in.
Here's the other thing that I think can be both over and understated. Miami just hired a new Temple coach. Like, if you get rid of the connections, right?
They've got the pipeline.
No. I'm not referring to Al Golden. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Damn.
Think about a group of five school who has had some success and they hire a new coach, whatever. Like, I don't know what example I could give right now. Like, who is a decent group of five school that just hired an up-and-comer that has had decent success? I'll give it some thought, or you can give it some thought as I'm talking. It was plain as day that Manny Diaz has worked up to the point where, yes, he should be given a shot as a head coach on a somewhat major college football level. And it made sense. Oh, Temple hired Manny Diaz. He is, and that all made sense to everybody. He was a new Temple level head coach who has suddenly, without coaching, jumped up a pretty significant deal.
Yeah, right.
And so that to me is curious that this might be too big a leap too quickly, and that we might look back and maybe he'll have a great, if he doesn't work out at Miami, he'll have a great, you know, second stage of his career, and he'll look back and say, you know what, I don't know if I was ready for it in that moment. It would have been nice to get 2-3 years of reps at a group of five school.
You're thinking
before.
Like an Eli Drinkwitz kind of thing.
Yes. And I don't know. I mean, Manny Diaz has been a little bit more high profile at, you know, Texas and Mississippi State and Miami. So he has higher level experience.
Yeah.
But yes, if Eli Drinkwitz was hired at App State and then all of the sudden Washington State, if Mike Leach had left, we're like, oh, we really want Eli Drinkwitz. Like, oh, wow, that's okay, hop. And that might be something that comes into play.
All right, let's move on. Let's go over to another one.
I'm not pumping brakes, but I am going through the yellow cautiously.
Are we pumping the brakes on Jalen Hurts fitting in at Oklahoma? Now,
okay,
if we must rehash this for the kind folks, the smart folks that certainly listen to the show, Jalen Hurts is transferring over from Alabama. He went 26-2 in an Alabama uniform as starting quarterback, albeit running a much, much different offense. Certainly, as we saw with Kyler Murray last year, and as we saw that Oklahoma program ramp up on offense under Lincoln Riley, there's no shortage of playmakers. The question for them will be along the line this year. They lose a bunch of guys.
Right.
We did ask, I believe, in this very same show, virtually the same question about Kyler Murray in 2018, sort of that we're asking about Jalen Hurts now at Oklahoma. The fit, is it worth the emotional energy? Where do you come down on Jalen Hurts?
So I can very clearly see a world in which he succeeds pretty electrically. But the nagging thing to me is Kyler Murray, who we had in this position last year, Kyler Murray had time, years, plural, in Lincoln Riley's system, mental reps, practices, film, whatever. Baker Mayfield, years, and was already at Texas Tech in a very, not similar, but, you know, there are similarities, system. Whereas what Jalen Hurts is used to doing offensively can be pretty different than what Oklahoma has done. Not to say Oklahoma won't fit their offense to take advantage of his dual threat strengths, but that has me curious, since the record is not great of quarterbacks immediately jumping into a system as a grad transfer and succeeding. Now, there aren't always quarterbacks who have been as successful as Jalen Hurts making that move. So I understand that, and that the fact that Oklahoma is a Heisman factory, but the lack of time, the lack of comfort, it is worrisome, because there were certain advantages that Jalen Hurts enjoyed with Alabama's defense and didn't have to score a ton of points to put together a 26-2 record, right?
No.
Oklahoma's defense, got to score a little more than what the threshold is at Alabama. And he will have playmakers, as you have noted, but I am far less sure, and I was not terrifically sure of Kyler Murray last year. I'm far less sure about Jalen Hurts because of what we saw him do in the biggest games for Alabama. Even when he won, was not always the prettiest thing. And I have it up right here. Jalen Hurts was the 29th best quarterback in 2017 against ranked teams, you know, with yards per attempt, if that's a metric you care about, and 26th against ranked teams ratings-wise. So statistically, fine. He had so many advantages at Alabama, and as soon as a better thrower came along, he looked 20 times better through the air.
Yeah, good news for Jalen Hurts, his regular season schedule is a much lighter lift at Oklahoma.
Correct.
Than it ever was at Alabama. As I look through it here, it's a while before you get to a notable defense. It's probably, in all reality, not until we get to the Red River Shootout in middle of October. Right. Against Texas, until we're talking about this team playing what I would consider a real defense. Okay, the Big 12 has this reputation. It's not so much a defensive conference like the SEC, and that will bode well for Jalen Hurts, if only to get his feet wet in the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will help him along that learning curve. Your point, though, is very valid. He has not had the mental reps, the practice reps, of Kyler Murray from a year ago.
Right. Garbage time Kyler Murray a couple years ago. Yeah.
I do like the fact that he's very mobile, and that should help him.
Oh,
he's certainly got playmakers around him, but the line's going to be a little sketchy to start until it gels. I think Lincoln Riley will find a way to bring it all together. I think they will find a way to make him fit in. He may not fit in a Heisman sense like we saw with Kyler Murray. He may not fit in a Heisman sense like we saw with Baker Mayfield, but there's certainly enough talent around him, and I think Lincoln Riley is bright enough of a college football mind that he can tailor a system. He's had all offseason to think about this. He can tailor an offensive system that will work for Jalen Hurts and will emphasize what he does well. My bigger question about Oklahoma is what Alex Grinch does on the defensive side. That's not the question here.
Right.
But as we move forward now into preview season, that's the question I'm going to be asking more. I'm going to ask about that offensive line, sure. But my first question is whether or not Alex Grinch can bring along that defense the way he's brought defenses like Washington State along in the past.
I think Texas Tech will be a good measuring stick at the end of September for Jalen Hurts, because that defense has come a long way. And now I think it's being run by the old ASU defensive coordinator, yeah, Keith Patterson. It's come a long way and it is probably okay. And that, I think, will give us, he should have a good game, not a great game, but he should have a good game against Texas Tech. I'm curious to see that as a measuring stick, because Houston, South Dakota, UCLA, UCLA on the road, kind of interesting. The defense has been kind of in shambles the last couple years. Those two games, UCLA on the road and Texas Tech, I think will be quite interesting to see what the potential bar is for Jalen Hurts. But yeah, the Texas game by mid-October will be huge.
That'll be the measuring stick. All right. Where do you want to go next, Dan?
Let's go to, okay, I like this one, and I think that there's a lot to talk about and unpack here. Can we pump brakes? Are we positive? Are we sure that, whatever, after further consideration, can Ed Orgeron provide something tangible for LSU that Les Miles couldn't?
Okay, hold on. I got to put the sound.
Okay.
Got to get that sound in there. Go ahead.
Please. This is the because LSU fans are very quick to like, what? I like Ed Orgeron. I like Ed Orgeron a lot. Near the end of his tenure, Les Miles was losing 3 games a year, and it was doing so in confusing manner at times. The late game situations were pretty problematic, and that culminated with the Auburn situation, I want to say 2016. Then Ed Orgeron becomes the interim, and I think a lot of people have rallied behind him, and they were a ridiculous game away from winning 10 regular season games last year, that crazy overtimes game against Texas A&M. So, tangibly speaking, right now, Ed Orgeron is not necessarily getting great passing. It's fine. I don't think it's anything demonstrably better or worse than where Les Miles was in inconsistent passing games. He's lost 3 games. I don't think LSU has, this is my correction from before, they've scored a touchdown in Baton Rouge against Alabama since 2014. A single touchdown, and that was in the first quarter in 2014. So it's been a while. I think it's been 11 quarters, if my math holds up. So that is worrisome. And so, tangibly speaking, I think Ed Orgeron needs to take LSU to 10 regular season wins. And until that happens, is he like barrel-chested Les Miles?
Barrel-chested?
Just in terms of bottom line. I understand the organization. I understand that coaches may have more confidence in him running the program day to day, that, you know, he has evolved into this very impressive head coach. But when do they get their new Zach Mettenberger? When do they get that 1 year of Jamarcus Russell? When do they get above average quarterback play at the same time as great defense, great recruiting, confidence from the coaching staff, confidence from the administration and boosters? Is there anything else other than 10 wins that would provide a tangible improvement light shining on Ed Orgeron?
That is such a good question, Dan.
And wow. Here's the sub question, Ty. And you can answer that one first, but what is the biggest perception change with one win? Like, is it going from 5-7 to 6-6? You're like, oh my God, this is a totally new and improved team because all of a sudden they're going to the Meineke Car Care Bowl.
Right.
Or is it going from 9-10? Is it going from 11-12, which obviously undefeated before a potential conference championship? Is it going from 7 barely bowl eligible to 8 comfortable? Where to you is the biggest perception shift with one win? So answer the first question first and then the second.
Okay. So first things first, I'm gonna talk about something that took me by surprise a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that was Joe Burrow. Now, when Ed Orgeron took over at LSU, I remember distinctly you and I talking about the perception problem that we had with LSU, and it was that the offense hadn't matured or mm-hmm. hadn't evolved to a point where it was good enough to get to the heights that LSU fans wanted it to get to.
Right.
They brought in Joe Burrow. Now, I'm not saying Joe Burrow is Peyton Manning. I'm not even saying Joe Burrow is...
Cooper Manning?
Cooper Manning, okay. But Joe Burrow was pretty good. And the stats...
He was fine.
The stats aren't reflective of how big he came up in some really key spots throughout the course of this LSU season.
LSU finished, and this is a metric I think we both like, 34th nationally in offensive points per drive. So that's a pace-adjusted stat. That's pretty good.
So that's an improvement. I think the fact that they've got him back now, that will help solidify the offense, hopefully move it forward. But that's the biggest issue I have.
50th the year before.
I had, let's say, with LSU under Ed Orgeron. Can he give them something tangible that Les Miles didn't? Now, if you are using one win to get to 10 regular season wins as your bottom line barometer, it's been a while. It's been since 2012 since LSU won 10 games in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it helps to get to double digit wins in the regular season, no doubt. I also don't think that that's the proper measuring stick. Okay. I think the SEC West constantly measures itself against Alabama. Constantly.
Yes. That's the unfortunate thing. Yeah.
That's the unfortunate thing. If Ed Orgeron is winning 10 games almost anywhere else, he's a saint. The problem is that they're in the same conference, in the same side of the same conference as the Alabama Crimson Tide. And oh, by the way, pretty much every other team on that side of the conference has also gotten a lot better. They've also found ways to upgrade their program. I'm looking at you, Texas A&M. I don't know if that 10-win mark means as much as it used to, and that's unfortunate for Orgeron. He has steadied the ship. He's won 9 games each of the last 2 years in the regular season. I think that's a good step in the right direction. But can he give them something tangible that Les Miles didn't? I'm looking at Les Miles' career record right now. Granted, he was at LSU a long time, but he did win a national championship, and he lost another.
What I wonder is, and we'll never know, but and we've seen this in other divisions, other conferences, whether it's, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, whether it's, you know, Mac Brown is, you know, the best modern coach Texas has had. And Bob Stoops happens to also be the best coach Oklahoma has had. And it just all happened at the same time. Or Jim Harbaugh taking Stanford to these crazy heights, but Chip Kelly having Oregon a little bit better. And that's this constant thing, although those are much shorter lasting, is what does the SEC West look like if Alabama is merely great and not all-time elite excellent?
Yeah,
like,
right.
What happens if it's just a year-over-year 10-2-ish Alabama program, like it's a Blake Sims Alabama program?
Right.
All due respect to Blake Sims or Jake Coker. You know, those kind of, like, that's, you're not getting top quarterback level, and maybe there's defensive lapses like they had against, you know, it was 2010 South Carolina or, you know, something like that, Ole Miss those past couple years, where that just happens a couple times a year. And what is that? How does that change the Les Miles career arc? How does that change things with Kevin Sumlin? How does that change things with, I mean, Dan Mullen was going to leave for Florida whenever he possibly could leave for Florida. And Hugh Freeze has nothing, you know, his departure doesn't really have anything to do with Alabama. But how does that change things around the SEC if Alabama is merely, oh, they're a great program?
Well, we've talked about this before. How many teams in the SEC, like, pretty much all of them have experienced some kind of coaching turnover in the span that Saban has been at Alabama. He's driven He's driven the SEC. He's driven all of college football crazy. Everyone's trying to get better than him, and nowhere more so than perhaps at LSU, who for so long has been that natural rival, at least in the SEC West, to the Crimson Tide. I like Ed Orgeron. I like the fact that, I know I just talked about how it's overrated and it still is overrated, but I like the fact that he is sort of like the hometown guy that everyone's rooting for. I like the fact that he wanted the job more than virtually anyone else. I like the fact that we sometimes question how many screws he has loose. I like the fact that he brings that edge to LSU. And there
I think the screws are tightened.
The screws might be tightened. They're still a little bit loose. And you always had that component with Les Miles there, the Mad Hatter at LSU.
Sure.
It was always that edge that made LSU very interesting to watch from the outside.
And I think people just got tired of it. Just like, okay, we get what late stage Les Miles is.
He needed new material, right? That's that's what it amounted to. And perhaps the upgraded version or the different version of Les Miles can be Ed Orgeron. Les had a lot of good years at LSU. If Ed Orgeron can put together a better offense, if he can get things going in a better direction offensively, I think the talent is there. I have confidence that he can build a defense. I think he can get LSU back to a point where winning 10 games is something they can do in the regular season. The question for LSU people is, can they beat Alabama? Can they win the SEC West? Can they win the SEC? I don't know the answer to that. Right now, the answer doesn't look like it's a yes.
Which are you more sympathetic to, asterisk-wise? LSU, and I don't even know if LSU people say this. This is me projecting. But, well, I mean, they're this 7 overtime. They're like 17 pulled hammies away from winning that, you know, 7 overtime game. You know, Ed Orgeron was doused in Gatorade. They were so confident the game was going to end when it did. Or are you more confident in using the asterisk when we just over and over made fun of Mike Gundy for saying, well, the Central Michigan game's really a win. So our record's really because of the bad Hail Mary call. I think I'm still giving the edge to more sympathy for LSU Oklahoma State had an opportunity to win that game and they didn't.
Absolutely.
LSU, that was like a way out of character game that I don't think Texas A&M definitively can lay claim to. So I think they're pretty close to a 10-win team.
They're very close. The question is almost unfair to Ed Orgeron. Can he provide something tangible that Les Miles couldn't? Les Miles provided a great deal. He won a national championship. Ed Orgeron, though, I think can get them back to that level, which is encouraging.
If I gave you odds right now of double-digit points scored by LSU against Alabama.
No, I don't want it.
If I give you plus 250?
2.5 to 1? No, I need more.
If I gave you plus 400?
I would take 4 to 1.
4 to 1 odds of LSU getting into double digits after being shut out 2 of the last 3 years. Okay.
Double digits is 10 points. I would take 4 to 1. I'm not sure about 2.5.
Okay. All right. What is your next break pumper?
Well, I have a very important question, and that is, how often do you think about your socks?
Every single day.
We've been talking about it forever on the show.
I'm Mr. No Show now, by the way.
Oh, really?
That's how I live. With pants, without pants. Yep.
Is that a dad move, Dan?
I don't know if it's a dad move. It might be more of a, I like to wear pants to the office space I go to, but I don't care if anybody sees my ankles or my shins.
Yeah.
I want it to breathe as we enter into summer. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, we've been talking about the merits.
I don't cuff yet, if that's what you're asking.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying.
I'm not ruling it out, but I do not do it yet.
We've been talking about socks forever, the value of having dry, comfortable feet all throughout the day. The best way to accomplish just that is by looking up our good friends over at Bombas. B-O-M-B-A-S is how you spell it. We've had Bombas socks supporting the Solid Verbal, the feet, literally, of the Solid Verbal hosts for eons now. I can't even tell you how many years it's been. We are not kidding. I've got them on right now. Dan, you might. I don't know.
I'm wearing sandals right now, but I do have a story. Continue, though.
We've had Bombas donning our feet for countless years. We are here to tell you they're the real deal. They're the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. They're made from super soft natural cotton. Every pair comes with arch support, a seamless toe, a cushioned footbed that's comfy, but not too thick, if we're being honest. They've got numerous colors, patterns, lengths, styles. Bombas, they look great at the gym. I wear them to the office. Don't tell my colleagues.
I think that's cool. CIA has a very lax policy.
They are what feet daydream about best of all. With every Bombas purchase, they donate a pair to someone in need, which is a cool little perk. You can buy your Bombas today at bombas.com/solid and get 20% off your very first purchase. Again, that is bombas.com/solid. 20% off. Bombas.com/solid. Take our word for it. We do wear them. We do appreciate their support. They've been with us forever. We know you will like them on your feet as well.
I think that's right. I my only real quick story is apparently I left a pair of Bombas no shows at West Coast Kevin's place in Austin when I visited him and his family.
Tell me he wore them.
And he is now wearing... Oh, no. He gave them to our mutual friend, Scott,
okay.
to give me when we were back in LA. This is, they called it the Brotherhood of the Traveling Sox. And Scott is now just wearing them.
Beautiful.
Because he couldn't look at them for that long without putting them into action. So Bombas, popular around the globe, and could not recommend them enough. They're the most comfortable. You're only as comfortable as your feet. B-O-M-B-A-S, do it.
All right, Dan. I don't know if
you want to do the big dog. Do you want to do a conference?
Do you want to do an up-and-coming coach? Let's save the big dog for later.
Okay.
I think we both know what the big dog is here on this list. Let's go to up-and-coming coach.
Okay.
Pump the brakes, pedal to the metal, whichever way you want to play it. Jeff Brohm. Did he or did he not do a good thing by staying at Purdue, even with all of that cash that was being offered from Louisville?
And Purdue.
Did he do a good thing staying where he's at? You pump in the brakes, you go and pedal to the metal on that.
Did he miss a window to maximize his value in a very volatile profession?
Yeah.
So we've sort of talked about, I mean, I will give my opinion. I won't speak for you, but he's going to make upwards of, what, $5.5-6 million either this year or eventually with his new deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sets the market for him if, you know, Purdue goes 8-4, 9-3 and he gets a job at some huge blue blood after he's done at Purdue, he will make, yes, $7-8 million, whatever, which is just crazy.
A lot of cash.
The Sindelarity is the wagon to which he is hitching.
Right.
Elijah Sindelar had an extraordinary bowl game as quarterback 2 years ago against Arizona. I think that was in the Bay Area. That was Foster Farms, whatever it's called, that bowl game. And then last season, didn't really play. They lose to Eastern Michigan, I want to say, and he had kind of a bad game. And really has not proven himself over the long term to be like, I am the dude, at least that even David Blau was. And is Purdue in a place now with winnable games for sure, with talent, especially on offense, and taking a pretty enormous step back on defense last year, culminating in that game against Auburn?
Right.
Is Jeff Brohm hurting his long-term potential by staying at Purdue, which probably has a pretty defined ceiling, and I don't think Louisville has that same ceiling in the ACC. I don't think anywhere else, really, in most other conferences, have the ceiling that Purdue does. And I don't know if I love the place Purdue is in to fully showcase Jeff Brohm, and I think it might hurt him.
Okay. I disagree.
Wow. Okay.
I disagree. And here's why I disagree. You were right to point out that the defense took a significant step back. But you're also slightly blind to the fact that it took a huge step forward in year one under Jeff Brohm. I remember
when a lot of upperclassmen there already.
A lot of upperclassmen, but when he took over, I remember looking at Purdue in advance of, I guess, the 2017 season, and you and I talking to each other like, this defense is going to be an issue.
It's rough.
This is going to be a problem for the Boilermakers.
And Nick Holt had done a good job going in, yeah.
And lo and behold, the defense ended up sort of being the talk of that team. Now, last season, not so much. They dropped pretty significantly. If you look at what Purdue did on offense over that two-year span, it was sort of the opposite. First year, not so good. Down in like the 90s, I want to say, in terms of how many points they're putting up per game.
Right.
Last year took a pretty significant step forward. Up into like the 50s. They were in the top half of college football. So I think what I'm trying to say is that this is a guy who could coach. Now, it's going to take a while to try and assemble the pieces. He's only been there 2 years. He needs to get his guys in there. He needs to establish a culture, needs to establish a system, needs to get some of those
underclassmen. I think he has. At this point, he has.
Need to get those underclassmen programmed accordingly to do what he wants them to do. But look, he's already going to be making a lot of money. It depends on your definition of maximizing your value. I think if he can get things going in a good direction, all the ships rowing in the same direction at Purdue, and at least make them plucky, which he seemingly has done, that in and of itself will make him marketable. Louisville already wanted him after just like two seasons after.
They had a connection to him.
But they are not the only school that was interested in Jeff Brohm, I can assure you. And moving forward, they will not be the last. So I am not worried at all about Jeff Brohm's marketability. He is at some point going to cash in a very big way. He is one of the few up and coming coaches who can bide his time at Purdue, wait for the right job to come along, and then cash in at a later date. I don't think this hurts him at all. I think it's good for college football. It's certainly good for the Big Ten that he decided to stick around at Purdue. He's going to be just fine.
So the phrasing I always like, though, is at a certain point, can he just go 6-6 every year and maintain the market value that he currently has?
Cliff Kingsbury is now the head football coach at Arizona.
I get that. But he can point to specific quarterbacks that he helped to develop that I don't think...
The Arizona Cardinals, not the University of Arizona.
I getcha. I think that's more of a reflection on the Arizona Cardinals than it is the general market.
Could also be true.
I would just be worried that if he goes 6-6, 5-7, 7-5 in perpetuity, next 2, 3, 4 years, and perpetuity obviously means forever, so I'm misusing that word. I think his attraction is going to plateau.
Well, it's certainly possible, but you and I both know there are plenty of coaches around college football who develop a reputation as being a forward thinker or an up and comer or you name it. Manny Diaz could be one of those, by the way.
And certainly.
They remain marketable perhaps longer than they should be. Now, I don't want to lump Manny Diaz quite into that, but you get my point here. I think Jeff Brohm's going to be fine. I think he is viewed by enough people as an up-and-comer, a bright young college football mind. He will remain marketable for a good long time. This isn't going to hurt him. Even if Purdue bottoms out, which I don't think they will because he's a good coach, he's going to be just fine.
I would like to point out that the 2018 Purdue Boilermakers gave up 23 points to the Michigan State offense.
Okay. Let's move on.
With their backup quarterback.
Let's move on. I want to get your take on something here. Now, I had written another Pac-12-ish question, but you put something here that I think is an interesting topic for discussion.
Yeah.
Are we pumping the brakes or are we not pumping the brakes? Did the Pac-12 do the right thing by not taking ESPN's offer to distribute? Now, you're going to have to
Network
explain
and Pac-12
this.
Game. Yeah.
You're going to have to explain for the footballerhood here what exactly transpired.
So it's pretty straightforward. The Pac-12 has been big on owning itself outright, and that includes, you know, they have these deals with Fox and ESPN to show games, but they own the Pac-12 network outright. They like the ownership element of the network. And I understand that in general, big picture, you want to own everything you possibly can. You have more control. You make more money if it's successful, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with the Pac-12 is, as we've talked about many times here before, there are certain built-in disadvantages that the Pac-12 have, be it schools without long-term traditional success or the fact that it's on West Coast tiled schools, or most of its schools are on West Coast time. So some of the bigger games are into the night. Not a lot of people on the East Coast or Southeast and, you know, Central time are able to see all this big action. And they haven't had teams in the playoffs. They've been close since, they've had Washington, they've had Oregon, but they haven't had major, major success since, I suppose, both Chip Kelly's run at Oregon and Pete Carroll at USC, with this nice little Washington blip, but not necessarily on a national level. So the Pac-12 is struggling with branding. The Pac-12 is struggling with, you know, garnering attention for some of its better stories, some of its more interesting teams, some of its more interesting coaches. And not that you're buried on the Pac-12 network, because plenty of people can see the Pac-12 network. I think that's a little bit overstated, a little overwrought. But I think the Pac-12 has a perception issue that can be overcome with some more thoughtful exposure that they are not necessarily willing to buy into. And ESPN made them an offer to help distribute the Pac-12 network because ESPN has leverage with cable and satellite providers in exchange for extending ESPN's existing deal with the Pac-12, presumably at probably a sweetheart rate for ESPN, you know, in exchange. So, yes, I understand the Pac-12 wants to make the best deal for itself, But again, I'm a, at a certain point, kind of talker and thinker, right or wrong. At a certain point, when does the Pac-12 say, yeah, we could use a hand?
Right.
That doesn't involve private equity investing money so the Pac-12 can still maintain whatever level of control they want. And as somebody who loves and adores Pac-12 football, I really wish, and you know, let's say ESPN comes in and they say, okay, we're going to create like a Hard Knock style show showcasing Chip Kelly and UCLA or Justin Wilcox and Cal. We'll put it on ESPN Plus. Like, they're doing things to raise the profile of certain things, or we'll, you know, attach cameras to ASU and Herm Edwards. And now I guess, what's his name? The Bengals coach that just joined up, Marvin
Lewis. What is it?
Marvin Lewis. I can't keep track. Yeah. That they were willing to do things to go above and beyond to help with the brand of the Pac-12. And the conference just said thanks, but no thanks. And I don't think the conventional wisdom is that the Pac-12 did the right thing, but I'd just like to revisit it and say, what are we doing?
Well,
Come on.
Here's what's interesting about
as
this
ESPN
question.
Is preparing to launch the ACC network.
Right. Here's what's interesting about this. On this show last year, we also had a question about the Pac-12. And that question was, does the Pac-12 know what it's doing? Essentially, are we sure that the Pac-12 knows what it's doing? That it has somebody in charge. Again, right. We're asking a question, a business question, about how the Pac-12 is conducting its distribution. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with this. I don't. And it's for a couple reasons. First off, granted, the media landscape is changing, but it's sort of an open secret that live sports are very marketable. And they tend to retain their value. So even if you don't cash in from ESPN now, in 5 years, when the current deal with Fox and ESPN expires in 2024, what's to say that ESPN isn't going to come back in and also try to get their hands on the Pac-12 then? I think ESPN would still probably be in the bidding. I'm not a business guy, but it stands to reason that if they were interested now, they're probably going to be interested then.
Can I throw something out as well?
Sure.
I have a theory that we are in a streaming bubble.
Okay.
That streaming has gotten to the point where, okay, you're subscribing to Hulu and Netflix and whatever, what's Disney Plus, that's what's coming soon.
Right.
And Warner Brothers is going to do a thing. And you have Amazon, you have all of these different entities. And ESPN is ESPN Plus, and Fox has, I don't know if it's Fox Sports Go still or just Fox Sports. You have all of these different entities that you need to shuffle between. And it's almost like, hey, if we could have, even with how evil all of them are, if we could have one overarching system to watch everything we wanted to watch, say with a cable hooked up to your TV.
You mean like a bundle?
Like some sort of bundle, that might work out well. And I just think getting in well with cable companies who have the distribution model down pat and not saying, well, we're going to put our games on YouTube and everybody's going to watch it because that's how everybody's going to be watching TV in 2023. I'm pumping the brakes on that thought. How about that?
Well, that's fair. And we could take that offline. If you'd like to talk more about it.
I mean, you're a YouTube TV subscriber and I have, because of Jody with an I, I don't know, I've reconnected the cord because when she was on maternity leave, she's like, no, I'm not dealing with any of that crap.
Right.
Give me channels.
And that's all fair. I don't think that there's a whole lot that could happen between now and 5 years from now that's going to make the Pac-12 any less valuable. I don't necessarily disagree with the fact that we're in a bit of a streaming bubble. I also think that it's somewhat wise to wait around and at least explore other options, not take the first deal. In this respect,
can I tell you what I think might make the Pac-12 less valuable by 2024?
Yeah.
Six, what is it? Five, six straight years, 1920, one, two, three, four, six straight years of every team going somewhere between 4-8 and 10-2.
Okay.
And not appearing in the playoff, not showing out well in huge games in early September or in early January, and not necessarily having big time systems or coaches or huge national wins year over year over year. I think that could diminish the value of the Pac-12.
Well, we'll see. I am skeptical that there's a whole lot that could happen that would make live sports rights, at least in that sense, less valuable. And I don't really have a problem with it. The Pac-12 has been poorly run. We've had this discussion before. It's been poorly run. At this point, you've already got a deal. It's not like your games won't be distributed. Why not wait a year or two, see what your options are, see if there's anything new that develops. I think that's okay.
Pump me some brakes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Daniel.
Yeah.
Do
you want to finish with one big one? You want a couple more? What do you want to do?
Are we pumping the brakes?
Uh-oh.
On Clemson. Being a dynasty with no end in sight.
Ooh, okay. Lot to unpack.
So I did a show. Gosh, I guess it was at some point in December, maybe. It was before the national championship game, before the playoffs, with our friend Larry Williams from Tiger Illustrated. One of, like, the foremost authority on Clemson football.
Love Larry.
Like, all three of his books here on my bookshelf. He's an incredible resource, knows everything about Clemson football. He is impossibly bullish on the Clemson football program moving forward. It is certainly buoyed by the fact that they've got all-world everything Trevor Lawrence as their starting quarterback. Had an incredible true freshman campaign.
And DJ Uiagalelei.
Yeah, I mean, they're putting together maybe the best recruiting class of all time.
Right.
This coming recruiting cycle. So Clemson's in a very good spot. It's clearly a program that has reached critical mass. Larry's high on them. I don't think there's any college football fan out there who isn't high on Clemson as well. This is not a program that is going to experience any kind of dip anytime. So they're not going to dip down 8-4. It's just not going to happen. I don't see any chance of that, happening. Right. But when you start talking about a dynasty is a different word. Over the next 5 years, the future looks very bright for Clemson.
They've won 2-3, right?
Yes. 2-3. But over the next 10 years, where will Dabo Sweeney have this program? Is it a dynasty with no end in sight, the way Alabama has seemingly been a dynasty with no end in sight, Dan?
Right. So, well, I mean, USC won a couple in 3 years early on in Pete Carroll's tenure, much to the chagrin, I guess, still of LSU fans. And that lasted a long time, USC being really good. But they weren't appearing in national championships the back half of, you know, after the Oklahoma game and after the Texas game. Then did they appear in a national championship or in that national championship conversation? They were Rose Bowl good year over year, but they slowed down. And a lot of that had to do with attrition. And then, of course, Pete Carroll leaves. I don't know what is the specific thing that could slow this momentum.
Yeah. Right.
Brent Venables seems like very happy there. I still think he'll eventually leave, but he's waiting for the perfect job, probably. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong certainly often enough. I'm the surest thing in college football picking. But the only real thing I could see that could transform Clemson from 11-1, 12-0 into 9-3, 10-2 is attrition among coaches. Dabo flirting with an NFL job or something like that. And I don't fully see that right now. And just making a dud of a hire and having, and this is any program, like two quarterback duds in a row, recruiting wise, just misevaluation, didn't work out because of injury, system, whatever. This is not really a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical. Does this dynasty continue given if the talent is, you know, still coming at this pace and developing at this pace? The position coaches are the same. Offensive staff is the same. Defensive staff is the same, except for one guy. Is Clemson a national title contender in 2019, like they are right now, if you replaced Brent Venables with Brian Van Gorder? I ask you this. That's what it is. It's going to be that's sort of what happened with Auburn after they won the national championship. Just a couple of dud hires and take it easy, Gene Chizik.
Right. When I did the show with Larry, I asked him pretty much the same question. What would it take to slow down this momentum? And it's not an easy answer. Of course, it's all a bunch of hypotheticals. You could have a team that doesn't come together. You know, the bad chemistry. That's all.
It's hypotheticals, but it's really not. It's real. Like, that's what happens when
this is what happens.
Teams slow down.
Sure.
It's just replacing either players or coaches with misevaluated personnel.
It's something doesn't mesh. You could have bad chemistry among players, among coaches. You could have a guy like a Venables leaving. Certainly, if Dabo leaves, that could have a downstream effect as well. But there's no easy answer. He didn't really have a good answer. I think you look at the talent coming in, it's hard to see a situation like that taking shape anytime in the near future. But to your question specifically, Brian Van Gorder steps in. The schedule to me is still easy enough that they could get by. Even if they're not winning the national championship.
That's the thing.
They're getting to the playoff game. They've still got a ton of talent on the offensive side of the ball. They still got Trevor Lawrence. In the short term, in 2019, absolutely still a playoff, still a title contender.
With BVG?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Now, they might get to the playoff and give up 40 points.
Yeah.
But are they getting to that playoff game? Sure. Absolutely. Look at the rest of the ACC. I think they're fine.
How many teams in the ACC need to be legitimately good, legitimately 8-9 win threats before you look at the conference and say, wow, this is now a deep enough ACC that I am legitimately worried about Clemson losing twice or three times and not even maybe still making the ACC championship, but not penciling them in like they are now? Like, who is the team? So we know Florida State has a capability. We know Miami have the capability just because of talent availability. And I just recent history, you know, says that these could be double digit winning teams. And Florida State's won a recent national championship. That's not a huge stretch.
Right.
Who is the team that, like, okay, we're now down to, if Virginia Tech is year over year 9-3, is it Louisville in their own division? If Scott Satterfield gets the Cardinals to a point where they're 9-3 every year with a lights out defense like they've had under him at App State, are you suddenly saying, okay, now that Clemson, Syracuse, NC State, Louisville, Miami are all, maybe even Pitt, are all 8-ish win threats, I don't think Clemson has an easy road anymore. Do you need more teams than that? Fewer teams?
Well, they had like 10 bowl teams this past year.
I don't care about that.
But legit, like, eight.
They play 8 conference games. It's not the hardest thing to get to a bowl.
I mean, it's got to be at least 7.
Who needs to be good? What is the specific? I think it's Louisville.
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 Georgia Tech, maybe?
Yeah. Potentially, yeah. They have a high talent ceiling being where they are. If it gets all the way down to Georgia Tech, the most obvious improvers are Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, Louisville. So if it gets down to Georgia Tech improving to 8-9 wins a year,
yeah,
I could see that.
All right,
but
then,
we're years from that
we're years from
situation
that.
In the ACC.
I'm not pumping the brakes on.
No, I don't think I am either.
The Clemson dynasty. Let's close out with this one. Okay.
Okay.
It's a bigger picture thing. I already know we disagree. It'll be a fun conversation to close out the show with. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you pumping the brakes on the college football playoff as a good thing?
Or just pumping the brakes on the college football playoff?
Are you pumping the brakes on the college football playoff?
Yeah.
I am not. Explain your point. I will explain mine.
It feels forced at this point.
It feels, whoa. That's your point? Yeah.
Well, that's the opening salvo of my point.
We went eons with a bowl system.
I know.
That was essentially a beauty pageant. And you're telling me a playoff system is forced?
Ty, did you ever have a crush on a young lady when you were in elementary school or middle school?
On a young lass,
high school? Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Sure.
I did as well. And I don't have a specific story about this, but I have a friend who has a specific story who pined after a young lady for years and years and just consumed all on a healthy level. He was not sitting in trees or anything like that. And eventually, in high school, he took her to a dance. And I was like, this is the culmination. Oh, my God, I can't believe we are final. Like, this is my dream. It's being realized. I've been wanting this for so many years. And then it was just disappointing.
Okay.
It was just disappointing. And I have reached the point where it, whether it's, you know, Jimmy Kimmel singing, trying to get people interested in New Year's Eve, I am reaching the point where we are seeing the same games and we're seeing the same teams, and we're supposed to talk about the sport as if that's not going to happen in perpetuity, where it is just becoming tiring. And I just, and we've talked about this, this is not me breaking any new ground on the show.
Right.
I just want week 10. I am just, the playoff is just not getting me hot and bothered.
Wow. Wow. First off, Dan,
I want the Rose Bowl. I maybe it's because I'm a dad now and I'm just feeling old fashioned and daddish, but
you were of this mind long before you were a father.
That is true.
First,
the wheels
off,
were turning.
First off, how dare you besmirch the good name of this song?
This New Year's Eve.
I know.
You know I have this at the ready at all times.
Yeah. It's just when you have to start employing a PR firm, and not my favorite.
It depends on what your objective is for a college football season. As the fan of a team, as the fan of a sport, this is where we differ. You, for whatever reason, and I will never, ever be on the same page as you.
Okay.
You believe that you can go to a bowl game. You believe that some of our good friends in sports media can vote on who their favorite is. And even if you're not the national champion, that's still good enough. It was a good year. It was a good run. You had a great bowl experience, a great regular season. Let's move on to the next year. You're
be
fine
pragmatic.
With that.
Be realistic.
You're fine with that. I am not. I am
going,
not.
What, 9-3 and winning the Alamo Bowl? Great.
If you are going to play, why not play to win? Why not play to win the whole
win the Alamo Bowl
friggin' thing? Who cares about the Alamo Bowl?
I care, and the fine people along the Riverwalk would like to have a word.
I am not
Huffy taco enthusiast.
I am not of this mindset that everyone should get the ribbon and be happy with it.
I know.
I want the trophy. Give me the trophy. I don't think it's fair.
Start with the playoff touchdown, Ty. Start easy.
I don't think it's cool that places like UCF don't get a realistic chance to play for the crown. They play a lot of the same teams, but they can't play for the crown. I think if you're going to be in that...
A lot? I don't know.
If you're going to be in FBS, they should find some way to give everyone a realistic chance to win that one big prize. But there is one big prize.
The big prize that's existed for 5 years.
A high school baseball coach once said, it was the only smart thing he ever said, only one team should go home happy at the end of the year. And I subscribe to that. That's the way pretty much all the rest of sports works.
It's such a different setup, high school baseball and college football.
It doesn't have to be.
Not apples to apples.
One team. One team is your champion. That's what we should be playing for. I don't like the fact that old school college football was like figure skating.
Where
we left it in the hands of judges.
Give it to... It's content, Ty.
It is content. We are in the content business. You're not wrong about that.
Yeah.
As a fan, though, I want to see it happen on the field. I want it to be determined on the field. If you are champion, I want you to earn it. I don't want it to be voted upon. Earn it.
If Alabama and Clemson trade off national championships the next 5 years, will you feel the same way?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
I could see myself softening on the stance if we get like Penn State, Texas Tech, I won't say Oregon, but I'll say an interesting Pac-12 team. I don't know. Utah is out of nowhere with Andy Ludwig, a team with an amazing offense, and Miami this year. Wild roller coaster of a Manny Diaz opening year. We get those teams in the playoff, I'll soften. I definitely will soften.
Let me ask you this, then, okay? Let me spin it back around on you.
Yeah.
Your question is, if it's the same teams in the national championship, will I feel differently? What if it were the same situation, but we still had the old school bowl system?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking BCS, but I'm talking old school bowl system.
Right.
Let's say both Alabama and Clemson remain dominant. They're locked into whatever bowl game they're going to, whatever bowl agreement their conference has, and they're just playing different teams year in and year out. We are still having this debate about which one is better. Do you think that's fair? Both are presumably in the midst of great dynasties in a college football sense.
Yeah.
And instead of them playing it out on the field.
Well, they might play it out at the Orange Bowl. Maybe we have an SEC-ACC game.
All right. Maybe we don't, though. Maybe we're back in this old school dilemma of arguing it out who should be the best team, who should be determined as the number one team. You're cool with that?
I love it. I want everybody to be a national champion. Yeah, I'm fine with it. I really am.
Man.
I want January 1, I want like 12 enormous bowl games, and I want to have to sort it out on this show for the next 8 months.
It would be good content. I'm fine with the content element of this, but as a fan, I disagree. But I want to see it on the field.
As it stands now, we have 126 teams who are supposed to feel disappointed at the end of the year because they didn't make the playoff. I think that's the wrong way of looking at it.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Write in,
tweet us. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email. We're going to get like 50,000 messages about this, okay? We've done it before. It's going to happen again.
Ty, here's my final question about this topic. What if it's not about the trophy, but the friends we made along the way? What if I told you? I want more days with multiple football games. And this limits things in a way that I don't love. I'm selfishly looking at this from both a content and from a day's worth of enjoyment perspective.
Ever the businessman.
Because this is just a TV event.
I know.
If you want the one true champion, go to 16.
I'm fine with that too. Do it.
Go to 16. Go to college campuses. We can have a conversation.
My argument, Dan, is that when you pick four teams, you have a better chance of picking the one true champion.
That's fine too. I just don't care about the one true champion. And that could be Oregon. And I don't care. I'd rather have, and I've said this to people, Ty. This is how serious I feel about it. I'd rather have three seasons of Oregon winning Rose Bowls with an exciting offense, you know, beating Wisconsin, beating Michigan, beating whoever, Ohio State, Minnesota, Michigan State, you name it, Big Ten team. I'd rather have 3 years of that than one season of Oregon putting it together and winning a national championship and having to deal with the expectations and what the program will have to go through as suddenly a national championship program. I'd rather have the Rose Bowl crowns than the national championship.
Would you rather listen to a podcast with terrible audio quality, recorded entirely with Blue Yetis, poor usage of Blue Yetis, because some people do it right?
Would you rather watch, I don't know what show is only okay. Would you rather watch all of the seasons of Alias in 8K or watch The Wire in 4x3?
They only shot The Wire in 4x3. That was before 8K.
Okay, so we're still talking about The Wire, not The Wire, but something else recently that's been excellent. Veep or Barry or any of those shows, Silicon Valley, I don't know. Whatever, I'm just naming HBO shows at this point. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I love all sorts of shows. 4x3, not a great picture, occasional lines adjusting things, or just what was a show after Lost that was like a Lost ripoff that they tried to do? There's a show on right now where a plane disappeared for 5 years on NBC. Yeah.
And Mike Tirico and Doug Flutie were talking it up during the Notre Dame games.
Yes, that is an Manifest. 8K, 11x1, Dolby, whatever. Just the most immersive, futuristic experience. You get to watch that. You get to watch The Blacklist with that. Or you get to watch Sopranos, The Wire.
This conversation's over, Dan.
4x3. Exactly, Ty. Exactly.
This conversation's over.
My gavel has been banged.
We're just going to have to agree to disagree.
I say start slow.
All right.
Score a touchdown in the playoff.
Well, please, everyone out there listening, we encourage you, as ever, write in. Let us know what you think. Tell us
fill
who's right.
Fill up the Reddit subreddit.
Yeah, fill it up. Go to reddit.com/r/solidverbal. Our friend Peter will get a thread going about this show.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it. Chime in. Feel free to talk about how we're wrong. I'm fine
socks.
With that.
You've been wrong for
12 years, my whole life, whatever. We're fine with it. Solidverbal@gmail.com is the email. We're also on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Check out that Reddit. if you haven't already, sign up for a newsletter on our website. You can be the first, among the first, to know about all of our latest announcements. We've got live shows that we're working on literally as we speak. We've got t-shirts, which we're going to be pushing out in a couple weeks, I'd imagine. It is summertime, so we're working on that. Some other stuff. We're always,
I think they're ready to go. We'll put them out pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, we'll be working on all sorts of cool things here over the next few weeks as we really enter into the summer months, the home stretch, before we start talking about on-field college football action. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends. Tell your friends about the Solid Verbal.
Yeah.
Always willing to welcome new people to
be a
the
dude
experience. Yes.
Or, you know, that applies to everybody. It's not just men who can be dudes. Be a dude.
Dano, that's all I got.
That's all I have.
For that guy over there, my good friend. Still my good friend, even after yes! that discussion. Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, in rainy eastern Pennsylvania, thanks again for joining us on the show. Enjoy the rest of your week, all of your weekend, and until next time, stay solid.
Peace.